This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Friday, December 23rd, 2005. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, the U.S. beef trade is planning a full court press to convince Japanese consumers to purchase their product. Also, Tamiflu, the drug used to treat avian influenza, may not be 100% effective. I'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll get the lowdown on just where the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer comes from. And the Farm Bureau will be by with a commentary on the 2007 Farm Bill. It's all on the Friday holiday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Friday afternoon, prices settled like this. March wheat at the Kansas City at 380.5, up 4.5. At the Board of Trade, March wheat 334.5, up 3.75. May 343, up 2.75. March corn 214, up 1.25. May 222.75, up 1.25. July 230.75, up 1. September 238.5, up 1. January soybeans 613, up 0.25. March 625, down 0.25. July 640.75, unchanged. November 635.5, down 4. January soybean meal 203.40, down 20. January soybean oil 21.28, down 12. On the Merck, January feeder cattle 114.07.5, up 47.5. December live cattle 94.80, up 2.5. February lean hogs 65.25, down 2.5. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Santa Claus.
Going to go ahead and start on the Merck, where we got a fairly interesting cattle on feed report at noon. The placements at 117%, way more than the trade was anticipating, at least on average. But what I'm interested in is what were the weights?
Well, the weight breakdown was pretty big. 700 to 799 day was almost 30% higher than last year at this time. And the 800-pounders were up almost 17% versus last year. It wasn't a terribly negative report at face value. But if you put that together with the cold storage report earlier this week, in our view, it gives the packers kind of the psychological edge because the market, everyone in the market now knows the supplies are there. And this is a tough period for, you know, meat packing and kill because of the anticipation of a lot of holiday buying. And that's already been through the market. So bottom line is the market knows at this point we've got about 11.7 million head of cattle on feed. So that's a tough number. It's up there, and it definitely gives the packers a psychological edge in our view.
Does it break the market even further to the downside? I mean, I figured some of this was factored in already this week.
Yeah, very possible. You know, I think it'll happen probably early on. We'll know fairly quickly because the daily charts, the technicals on the daily charts show a positive look for next week, but the weekly chart is giving some pretty significant sell signals. So once everybody comes back from the holidays, I think we'll probably figure that out fairly soon because the technicals are prime and ripe one way or the other.
The longs at Kansas City were of a mind to buy some more two-month highs there today.
Yeah, very interesting. We talked to our friend in the KC pit today, and they had about 40 people there yesterday, and he thought that they probably had about half that today. But regardless, the market has set itself up, and this is where it comes back and comes home to kind of the corn pit. Wheat and bean markets are really probably trying to suggest to traders that they probably shouldn't, and it's not wise, you know, to step in front of the potential index funds buying and maybe starting as early as next week when they start to buy, Dave. So we want to see some follow-through in wheat. We see some overdone technicals on the daily chart. We hit our price target, our objective for new crop hedges in July, Chicago, 350 today, and our Kansas City guys hit their objective of 370. We recommend it on email and phone conversations to pull some more triggers, especially those that bought March calls about a month, month and a half ago. This is a place where you reward the market if you're listening to us. So we feel like it could have some more upside potential on funds continuing to, you know, cover shorts in the commodity trading fund arena, and maybe the index funds want to buy a little bit too. But this is not a place where you really want to sit down and say, "Oh, we're gone," you know, $2 or $3 higher, you know, something like that.
What would happen if we went through the 100-day moving average for the 36.5?
Well, that'd be real helpful. I mean, those are the kind of numbers that the trade, you know, looks at, especially the fund mindset. But you also have to go back and look, we think, at the dollar, at the gold, and at the energy complex and see, you know, even the bonds we need to start looking at more, because we've got to get an idea of where interest rates and inflation are in terms of where the financial market's going to be looking at the first of next year. And that's something that we really want to be a heads up on this winter. When we talk to clients, especially, is, look, we could see a psychological shift in mindset from an inflationary mindset to, oh, golly, we're overdoing the business cycle. We're getting to an oversupply mindset in the business cycle. Growth is going to slow down. The Dow is top. You know how the financial markets tend to spin one way at the end of the year, and then all of a sudden they come out with the exact opposite opinion not too long after the first of next year, and that certainly could influence how the portfolios are diversified and how they redistribute their monies in these index funds. So we want to be on guard, and like I said, we're in the camp here. All of us agree internally. We got our old crop corn hedge target at 212 hit. We got our 350 new crop wheat hedge target hit. We got our new crop 625 bean target hit. You know, we feel like we've been given a lot of Christmas presents. We feel like the producer has too, and we need to, you know, act upon it, at least in some form and in some percentage of sale.
And are your clients pulling their triggers or not?
Yeah, they really are. We're real proud of them. I mean, they really do see the value level assessment that we try and do and what's overvalue and undervalue. And the producers, it's been a long time, but we have seen for the first time in many, many probably years that the producers are in agreement with Chicago right now. Why are new crop beans, you know, straddling 650 instead of a 550 level given the fundamentals? And that's something that we're really happy and proud of them on. And, you know, one thing to look at on the beans, not to jump around too much, but it just brought up that point that you brought up. The July no bean spread has now gone inverted. It's premium by 5.25 cents to July. That's a real important leading indicator to us. We don't want to see that go carry again, because that means the spreads are widening and the cash market is done needing, you know, what it needs for right now.
Signaling the bulls are coming back.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what happened last year, and that's something we thought could happen this year as well. But it is probably time to start talking about keeping the bull fed when it comes to the bean market, Dave. It doesn't mean it can't keep happening, but they're going to be very wary to, you know, make extended highs of 50, 60, 70 cents without having really good justification for doing so.
And I would say that case might be a little more difficult given the exports, and at least than corn. I mean, if you look at the corn, we're only 42.7 million bushels behind a year ago. We really made up a lot of ground in the last month.
We have, and there's a lot of talk in the domestic market that ethanol is really going to rob a lot of domestic demand that the USDA is not factoring in. And, you know, we've done a lot of numbers already for 06, and world coarse grain stocks to use ratios and world coarse grain stocks in general could go down as easily as they go up, and obviously a lot is predicated upon the acreage, but even with good demand and 80 million acres here in the United States, we could still see a drop in stocks-to-use ratios on a global level for coarse grains, so that's something to keep in the back of your mind. But it's, again, when you hit price targets that a lot of people never really thought possible at this time of year, you, in our view, you certainly want to reward that market.
Thanks much, Mike.
Hey, Merry Christmas, Dave, and to everybody else out there, too.
Thank you. Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, Steve Hilberg, and taking a look at AM 580 meteorologist Scott Olthoff's forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. Mostly cloudy with light rain, snow, No, make it rain, excuse me. Light rain moving across Illinois. Lows ranging from 35 in the far west to 50 in southern Indiana tomorrow. In northern and western Illinois, cloudy with rain gradually mixing with and changing to snow in the afternoon. There's that snow forecast. Elsewhere, cloudy with occasional rain, possibly mixing with snow late. Highs from 36 to 47 degrees. In agricultural news, the Senate has repealed the 2000 law known as the Byrd Amendment, but compromised to allow U.S. companies that rely on it to keep receiving tariff revenues until foreign competitors stop illegal practices. The company redirects tariffs on foreign goods from the U.S. Treasury to manufacturers that file illegal dumping complaints. Byrd money will end entirely after October 1st of 2007. By a voice vote and with few members present, the House of Representatives Thursday passed the nearly $500 billion defense spending bill without a provision allowing oil exploration in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. The move came after senators on Wednesday blocked approval of the defense bill until the oil drilling language was stripped. That forced a return trip to the House for final approval. American beef producers unveiled a public relations blitz to woo cautious Japanese shoppers back to U.S. beef yesterday. The blitz includes advertisements, trade shows, town hall meetings, tours of American processing facilities, and endorsements from Japanese who eat U.S. beef. U.S. Meat Export Federation head Philip Tseng declined to say how much will be spent on the campaign. But National Cattlemen's Beef Association CEO Terry Stokes says it's important to move quickly.
We anticipate that over the next 6 months that we'll reach about 35% of our total production. That will meet the requirements outlined by the Japanese for our product. Part of that's dependent upon our ability to verify age.
A Tokyo newspaper reports that mid-sized supermarkets in Japan are planning to restart sales of U.S. beef Monday for a three-day period to gauge consumer interest, while major supermarket chains are remaining cautious. Stokes says full recovery of the market, which was some $1.4 billion annually pre-BSE, could take 3 years or more.
If you look back to the first occurrence of BSE in Japan, which was in September of 2001. At that point in time, we lost about 40% of our sales just because they had a case of BSE, and it took us up until December of 2003 to resume the level of trade that we've had prior to that.
On other BSE issues, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says the agency will scale back mad cow testing. To date, USDA has tested more than 500,000 cattle for mad cow disease, finding just one BSE case in Texas since the original discovery of the disease in Washington State 2 years ago tomorrow. A report published yesterday in the New England Medical Journal says patients can develop resistance to Tamiflu, a drug that's considered a key medical defense against deadly strains of avian influenza. According to the report, 2 of 8 Vietnamese patients infected with the deadly H5N1 strain of bird flu and treated with Tamiflu developed resistance and died. Meanwhile, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says preventing the bird flu virus from mutating to a human pandemic will take more funds than the U.S. has at its disposal. The H5N1 strain of bird flu has been responsible for killing at least 71 humans since it first appeared in Asian chicken flocks in 2003. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. One of the things many folks like best about Christmas is Christmas music. But you may not know where some of your favorite Christmas music comes from. That's where Ace Collins comes in. He's the author of the book, Stories Behind the Best Love Songs of Christmas. Wait until you hear what he has to say about the origins of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph And it was written in Chicago in 1938 by a man who lived on the wrong side of town. I mean, literally speaking, in his little two-room apartment, and I do mean two-room, not two-bedroom apartment, the wind would blow through the walls. This man had his heart broken one night when his daughter climbed up in his lap and said, "Daddy, why can't my mommy be like all the other mommies in the world?" And he looked over at his wife, who had had cancer since this little four-year-old girl, as for as long as she could remember, and therefore had never gotten to play with her and like other mothers did. And he didn't want his child to feel cheated. He wanted her to recognize that her mother was very, very important. So he made up a little story. The girl loved the story. And to make a long story short, this man who had spent all of his money from his salary on medical care drew pictures to that story and fleshed out that story. And the last four or five pages of that homemade book that he gave his daughter that year for Christmas are tear-stained because he didn't have any money for a Christmas present, and two, his wife finally passed away. Well, a man who was a friend of his read that little story and said, "You need to read this to the company at our New Year's Eve party." And he did, and the CEO of the company bought all rights to that story, which paid off the medical bills and moved Bob and his daughter Barbara to a better part of Chicago. And for the next 6-7 years, every child that sat in Santa's lap got a copy of those pictures and that story. Well, a major publisher came to that man and said, "Babe, we want to take this story," or came to this company and said, "We want to take this story to the world." And they said, "Well, let's give all rights back to Bob May. Talk to him about it." Well, suddenly Bob May found, after World War II, found himself the best-selling Christmas book in the world. He had remarried his new brother-in-law, Johnny Marks, said, "Let's write a song about that story." Well, Bing Crosby turned that song down. Dinah Shore turned it down. Bob Hope, who we talked about a while ago, turned it down. Another singer-actor turned it down as well. But his wife heard the demo record and said, "Gene Autry, you have to cut the song about the reindeer nobody will play with."
That's Ace Collins, author of the book, Stories Behind the Best Love Songs of Christmas.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's Listener Opinion Forum, Champaign County Farm Bureau's Karen Hertz says when it comes to the 2007 Farm Bill, now is the time to get involved at the grassroots level.
2007 may seem like it's a long way off, but with the end of World Trade Organization talks in Hong Kong and the new year just around the corner, it's a key time to start talking about the upcoming 2007 Farm Bill. That's why, among its many resolutions, the Illinois Farm Bureau delegate body discussed new possibilities for the direction of farm policy at the recent annual meeting in St. Louis. Delegates took a bold step by adapting their federal farm policy to allow for future flexibility so that the United States can be compliant with the World Trade Organization or others that may affect America's trading capability. The policy supports a, quote, World Trade Organization compliant farm program that provides revenue protection for individual producers. Illinois Farm Bureau President Philip Nelson called the revenue-based approach the most creative and forward-looking aspect of the policy. If such a transition from a yield-based safety net to a revenue-based safety net is necessary, it could be difficult, but in the end, such a struggle would be worth it to provide increased trade for American commodities. As 2006 progresses, discussions about the new bill will become more and more important. Whether or not WTO compliance will mean the end of countercyclical payments or the market loan program remains to be seen, but that's a question we can only help answer if we are involved in the process. Illinois Farm Bureau's new policy opens the way for the organization to be involved in the process. Throughout the coming year, there will be many opportunities to discuss and debate what will become the 2007 Farm Bill. Take advantage of these opportunities, contribute to the process, and stay tuned for more 2006 policy priorities from the Illinois Farm Bureau. For the Champaign County Farm Bureau, this is Karen Hertz.
Karen Hertz's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bruce.
Good afternoon and Merry Christmas. And
Merry Christmas to you. You're straying a little bit away from your base of operations over in Quincy this afternoon.
Get kind of a head start on the holidays here visiting family.
And we thank you very much for taking the time to talk a little bit of cash grain with us. It's been an interesting week, and we've had a pretty good technical rally at the Chicago Board of Trade, and it looks like the basis has held up fairly well despite the rally.
Really, I'm a little surprised at how well basis has held up. We have had some good cash movement here this last week. Really a big dichotomy and basis between the river and the processor, and obviously there's cash moving with some considerable truck lines at the corn processors, but the basis has hung in there. I think some of the pushes that might have been available a couple weeks ago are long gone, but numbers have held firm.
I mean, you look at corn today, Chicago, 7 under, unchanged. Central Illinois was unchanged, Peoria unchanged, Champaign unchanged. And the beans, Chicago unchanged, Peoria unchanged. You go to Quincy where you are, 4 under was actually up a cent today. Champaign unchanged, non-changed. I mean, this basis has held up very well, and the question now becomes, you know, as we get to the end of the year and perhaps producers at the beginning of next year let a little more go, will the basis remain firm or not?
I think that's going to be the question on will we hang in there or will we kind of get the tipping point where the market has saturated for the near term and takes a step back. We did see some of the river values a little bit better. Barge freight was a little easier this week. I think that's just a case of moderating weather. They were able to get in and get some barges empties cleaned out and put back in the pipeline, a little more water in the water, or water in the rivers. That kind of helped things out.
How much importance do we put on, for example, next week's export sales?
Sales, and I think shipments, are going to be a key, too. Monday's shipments report this week was really the best number we've seen all year. It was over 40. So we need to see the actual physical putting them on a boat at the Gulf and getting it out of here tip up a little bit, or the market's going to start thinking that we still have too high of an export number on the USDA projections. It's still early enough of the year we could come back, but they need to get them bumped up here. And Monday was encouraging.
You know, I suppose those big LDPs that we saw this fall, 45 to 48 cents in corn, which many producers did indeed take advantage of, gave them a nice little cash pop where they don't have to make as many sales as they might have otherwise needed to make. But I wonder, Bruce, how long does that last? I mean, how long can those LDP pops drag out and help producers before they have to do something definitive?
I think we're kind of running out of that money from some of the comments I've had in the last week.
Okay. And what advice do you have for producers, if any?
I guess my bias is still that we haven't necessarily seen any change in fundamental. We're seeing a technical rally. We're seeing nervousness that some of the index funds will come in buying it right at the first of the year like we saw last year. So it's a case not to get all bowled up, not to get into a false sense of security. And if you had some target levels you were looking at for revenue per acre, including the LDPs, to keep those in mind.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures at the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. An autopsy is planned for today to determine the cause of death of James Dungy, the son of Indianapolis Colts coach Tony Dungy. A police spokesman in Florida says the 18-year-old appears to have taken his own life. A cleanup of a tire dump in Danville has led the state to sue to get its money back. The Attorney General's office says the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency spent more than $1 million in 2002 to remove used tires from the Coltis recycling facility. Some of those tires were supposed to have been ground up and used as a cap on an area landfill. But state officials say Coltis hasn't reimbursed the state. The lawsuit filed this week in Vermilion County asks for the cost of the cleanup plus another $2.1 million. Illinois' Green Party has chosen its gubernatorial candidate. Carbondale civil rights attorney Rich Whitney accepted his party's nomination yesterday. Now Whitney has to collect 25,000 petition signatures across the state to get on the ballot for next November's general election. That's because the Greens are considered a new party in the state. Whitney says working to keep the Illinois National Guard home and out of Iraq will be one of his campaign initiatives and a cause he'd champion as governor. He also says he wants to bring universal single-payer health care to all the state's residents. The trip to grandmother's house is about to get a little easier this week or this holiday season if it involves using the Illinois Tollway. Officials are suspending all temporary lane closures over the holiday. Work will continue in the construction areas, but contractors will not be moving equipment or closing the lanes. Permanent closures will remain closed. New research involving U of I students suggests that if you're throwing a party and want to hold back on the alcohol, you should break out the highball glasses. The study says most people unwittingly pour too much alcohol into short, wide glasses. Experts call it an illusion of portion distortion. Researchers recruited nearly 200 students to pour 1.5-ounce shots from a bottle into one of two types of glasses, tall and skinny or short and wide. Students poured 30% more into the stubby glasses than the tall ones, even after 10 practice pours. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I'm going to get out my sunglasses and my suntan lotion and lather up this weekend.
Yeah, this is the warmest day we've had since late November. And temperatures warmed up nicely today across Illinois and Indiana, well into the 40s over most areas. A little bit lower up north where there's a little bit more snow cover, but what snow cover we have here in central Illinois has been steadily disappearing all day.
And I guess this warm trend will stay around for a few days?
Yeah, it won't be quite as warm. This is probably the warmest day we're going to see for another week or so, but temperatures will stay near to relatively near normal for the next week or so. Most of December, we've been running well below normal. So when you're looking at highs in the low to mid-30s and low overnight lows in the 20s and teens, that's pretty much normal for this time of year. So it looks like we'll have a little issue with a little storm system coming through here on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day that could bring will bring some rain and perhaps some snow to northern and central Illinois, especially once the cold air gets in here. And once that goes by, it looks like things will be fairly quiet next week. Like I said, with near normal temperatures, maybe a chance of more rain or snow about midweek.
Something mid to late week, snow, a little freezing drizzle, light snow, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right now it doesn't look like it's going to be a very potent system, so probably just enough to be a nuisance. But for the most part, once this system comes through on Christmas Day, we should be in good shape for most of next week. And fortunately, this time around, looks like the heaviest precip with this system over the weekend will be up in northern and western Illinois, generally where the drought has been occurring for the last 6-7 months. So that's some good news there, that they'll be getting, out of all the rain and precip out of this system, they should be getting the most.
I was going to ask you what your sense was of the subsoil moisture being recharged at this particular point in the winter season.
Well, we don't normally get a lot of precip in winter. We've had well above normal snowfall across Illinois so far, but the actual water equivalent has been much below normal except in the far north. We'll need some rainfall to probably help get some of that recharged, but normally we don't use a lot during the winter, so whatever falls, even if it's snow, generally will get into the ground, and the topsoils, if we keep getting frequent precip, should stay okay. We just need to get that infiltration down to the lower levels.
Let me ask it in another way. At what point come next year do you say, if we don't get a lot of rain, boy, oh boy, look out, we're running behind?
Well, I would think probably at this point, as far as planting is concerned, if we don't get some good rainfalls by mid to late March, then I'd start to be pretty concerned. January and February are normally fairly dry months, so we don't expect a lot, and whatever we get is pretty much bonus. But we should start getting more significant precip in March, and if we don't get it then I would start being concerned.
Thanks much, Steve.
All right. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 Central Time for our special Holiday Commodity Week. We'll be looking at what happened all year, and we'll also be taking a quick look at the year ahead. And we'll do that with Todd Gleason. This is Dave Dickey.
It's coming up on 2:37 Central Time, and you're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Jay Pearson for Celeste Quinn. Henry Frayne, our technical director, Harriet Williamson, the program's producer, with some help from Martha Deal this week. And now it's time to find out how things have been going on Wall Street today. Again, Scott Moe joins us from A.G. Edwards in Champaign. Happy holidays, Scott.
The Dow and the NASDAQ are little changed in thin trading as the market settles into the pre-holiday trading mode. A report that the November new home sales dropped more than expected was an earlier damper on enthusiasm. Reports of increased acquisition interest by private equity firms was a plus earlier this morning. Currently, New York's advance decline is 3-2 positive on issues and about 6-5 positive on volume. The Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,887. Down 2 points in volume of just over 829 million shares trading hands. Transports are up 12 at 42.63. Utilities are up a point to 4.11, and the NASDAQ's up 2 points at 22.48. Currently have 1,998 advancing issues, 1,244 declining, with 163 issues unchanged on the day. On the interest rate front, we have the January bond at 1.14 3/16. That's up 25 30 seconds, bringing the long bond yield to a 4.55. And oil's at $58.43 a barrel. That's up $1.50 a barrel. Once again, the Dow Jones Industrials are currently at 10,887. That's down just 2 points on the day. This is Scott Moe with H. Edwards and Champaign. Have a good afternoon.
Programming on WILL is made possible by Midas Auto Service Center, 304 West University Avenue in Urbana, offering complete car maintenance, scheduled maintenance, and repair service, including a nationwide warranty by ASE-certified technicians. Located near the U of I campus with shuttle service available. More information is available at 367-0300.
When North was South, on this moment of science. You're a polar explorer, and you've just reached the North Pole. The huskies are yapping, the cameras are ready, and you're just about to unfurl the flag when, all of a sudden, the North Pole becomes the South Pole. Imagine your chagrin. Okay, so it doesn't really happen that fast, but it's true that in the past, the Earth's magnetic poles have switched places. In fact, it seems to happen roughly every 250,000 years or so. How do we know this? When lava is in its molten state, the atoms in it can move around fairly easily. At this time, some atoms, like iron, will align themselves with the Earth's magnetic field in a recognizable way. Then, as the lava solidifies into rock, these little compasses get frozen in position. It's like writing your name in wet cement. By calculating how old the rocks are when we find these ancient compasses, we can figure out how long ago the magnetized parts were locked in. That tells us which direction was magnetic north tens of thousands of years ago. Surprisingly, it's not always the same as north is now. Occasionally, the poles change places. So, did the North Pole drift slowly southward so that at some point, magnetic north was in, say, Mexico City? No. The rocks tell us that, during pole reversals, there is a several thousand year period during which the Earth's magnetic field is either gone or very much weakened. At these times, north and south become arbitrary terms. Eventually, the magnetic field reestablishes itself, and it seems to be a matter of chance which side comes out north and which south. This moment of science comes from Indiana University with underwriting from the Office of the Chancellor. Today's program was prepared by William Oram with help from Gary Pavlis in Geological Sciences. I'm Don Glass.
In sports, the Bulls will be trying to avoid a third straight loss when they play at Memphis tonight. There are seven games